Jai Om Vishnu Pada. Padamaha Sarapara Jarya also Tedda Satashi Shima His Divine Grace Abhaya Chananan Bhaktivananda Gosami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananda Gaudi Vaishnava Prabhupada Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Dvaita Gadada Shri Vasidhi Gaud Bhakta Vrindhi Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gop Kavidona Sain Kundrani Kundat Eko Kahai Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Vajradam Ki Jai Jagadasnami Ki Jai Yumanamai Ki Jai Shimani Gulasi Devi Ki Jai Sambhid Bhakta Vrindhi Ki Jai Gaud Premananda All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vishnaya Vulaya Srimati Bhaktivinoda Swami Namaste Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pajani Nivashesha Srinivari Paschacha Deja Tani Vanganati Vandasha Dilanjana Shlakya Chakshura Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave. Okay. So, actually, before we continue with what we were discussing yesterday, I want to talk about something that's really important at this time. Especially, Baladev here? No. He was here.
Yes, he was here.
Oh. So that's something maybe I wanted him to hear. Anyway, you can convey the information to him later. So, we have this thing, not only in this town, but all over the world, this thing called enemy images. Some of you may have heard about that. Where someone acts in such a way that's contrary to our own feelings, our own concept of life, and what happens, I'm trying to think about it clearly, what happens is that people have different ways of interacting, different ways of management, and particularly they break down along two ways of management. One's called conservative and the other one is called liberal. Generally, people call me a liberal. That's a diagnosis, of course. Because I'm not really liberal. I'm conservative. No, I'm... Either one of the two, because I just, what I'm doing is I'm acting all the time to try to fulfill my different needs, that's all. So sometimes I'm very apparently liberal, you know, I let people dress any way they want, right, wear their hairstyle any way they want, what else they do? Anyone else? Eat anything they want, as long as it's not meat, fish, or eggs, right? So there's many things that I can be apparently termed liberal for. But on the other hand, I'm doing a lot of things that are very conservative. Like, I wake up early in the morning, I'm up at 3:30 in the morning, I chair my rounds early in the morning, I have a very strict sadhana every morning. So it's kind of bewildering. Am I a liberal or am I a conservative? You know, when am I? And neither or both. But I'm neither of them because I'm just a person trying to fulfill my needs. So what are my needs? So why do I act in such a way to allow almost any damn thing that drives people crazy? Does anyone have any ideas? What's my need? What?
Inclusion?
Yeah. But let's say connect to Krishna consciousness.
Contribution.
Bringing people to Krishna consciousness. Compassion, bringing people to Krishna consciousness. Not trying. Yeah, inclusion. In other words, yeah. Because I feel that you know, Yasku Sarvani Putani Admane Vuna Pashuti Sarvaputesha Chapanam. I see everybody as part and parcel of Krishna. I want everyone to participate in Srila Prabhupada's movement. I want everyone to chant Krishna's holy names, and I don't want to think about details. You know, like you have Adi Purusha there, who's dressed up like a devotee, you know, a devotee outfit. Actually, there is no such thing as a devotee outfit. It's not that this is these are devotional clothes and those are non-devotional clothes. It's not like that. Devotional clothes are things, are clothes that you use in Krishna service. Whether it's a dhoti or a sari or pants or a t-shirt that says, what, feeding? You don't know. People wear all these weird t-shirts. They have all these weird slogans on them. But anyway, so the point is that what makes something devotional is being used, is something that's used for Krishna's service. So I have a need for inclusiveness. I want to bring everyone to Krishna consciousness. Like you see, Prabhupada in the beginning days of the movement, he had people using bass drums to go on Harinam with, and people were dressed and dancing really weirdly. I mean, sorry about that diagnosis. They were weird. Anyway, but I just am thinking, I just want everybody, according to their ability or their details that they're attached to participate in Krishna consciousness. And then I look at the preaching that the ISKCON is doing in China and see that they're using Chinese instruments to chant during kirtan. They're using, instead of forks and knives, they're using chopsticks to eat with. Isn't that amazing? And so, we have to be inclusive. Yeah, so it's a need for inclusiveness, to bring everyone to Krishna consciousness. Not just to include everybody in my circle, but to actually bring everyone to Krishna's lotus feet, because I see that people are suffering in the material world. So I'm meeting that need by just being apparently liberal. But I'm not liberal. I'm just meeting my needs. You know, whereas conservatives. Anyway, I got to really get out of judgment. You know, I have a tendency to pass judgment. I'm going to go there. So where... I know I'm going to fail this test. So anyway, Whereas when I perceive people who are insisting upon a certain stereotypical, there's another diagnosis, but when I perceive people sticking to a certain style of dress and having let's say everything authoritarian, centralized, and then people leaving or not being encouraged to serve Krishna, I feel angry. Oh my God. Why haven't I conquered anger? Vajra Vegam, Manasukura Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udarapashta Vegam. No, there's nothing wrong with anger. Anger is good. Why is it good? Because it is connected to a certain need that we have. I'm not saying that all expressions of anger are necessary. Like if I go out with someone, to someone who I'm angry with, and I go like that to them, I'm not saying that that's good. It's not bad. But it's not good. I mean, it's really not appropriate. Let's say use the word appropriate rather than bad or good. So so I get angry. It's interesting. So is that anger bad? No. That anger is an expression also of my need for inclusiveness. my need for compassion. Because I'm seeing people that are excluded from the Krishna consciousness or discouraged. But then I have to think of a proper way, like we're talking about strategy, to channel that anger. Yeah, that sort of requires a cool head. So, and once I'm in touch, the point we made yesterday, I'm just giving an illustration of the point we made yesterday. Once you're in touch with your needs, you can have connecting your feelings with your needs, you can have a cool head to deal with it. And as was pointed out yesterday by Madhuri Radhika, that it's not always that you're going to be successful in your strategy, but at least you can have a cool head just by being aware of the need. So, all right, so my need is one of inclusiveness. And unless I get in touch with the need of inclusiveness, I'm going to be focusing my anger on the person. And I'm going to be thinking, I hate you! Right? And I'm blaming the person for my anger. Because here is a person, so try to stay away from conservative diagnosis, checking myself at every step. Okay. Here's a person, by his actions, or her actions, let's not be pointed here, who is not allowing people to come into Krishna consciousness, or discouraging people from Krishna consciousness. So once I have a cool head, then I can maybe understand that person's needs. Why? My question is for all of you is, why would a person who has some management responsibility in this time be focused very much on the details, the relative details? Because let me just backtrack a little bit. There's two things in Krishna consciousness that we're dealing with right now. One is details and the other one is principles. Principles are things like, can anyone think of principles?
Chant Hare Krishna.
Chant Hare Krishna. What's another principle? The four regular principles. No meat for shirek, no intoxication, no worse sex. So, they live with no lobsters or crabs. So, and then also other things like our Siddhanta. Siddhanta, what's a Siddhanta?
Krishna's the Supreme Personality of
Godhead. Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, and I'm Krishna. Is that our Siddhanta?
No, not quite.
Give me another item of Siddhanta, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Like the source of knowledge about Krishna
through
the Vedas.
Through the Vedas. Another one?
Part and parcel of Krishna.
Yes, the part and parcel of Krishna. Another one? Do you remember Dasamula? Bhakti is the means to realize Krishna. So anyway, so you have these inviolable principles. Inviolable means you can't change them. Whether you're Chinese or Japanese or Slovenian or where you come from the moon, it doesn't matter. You have these same principles. But other things are just relative. I mean, even some things that are in the shastras are relative. For example, in the Bhagavatam, there's an injunction insofar as how sannyasis should dress, which I'm violating right now. What is that injunction? No, no, that's the wrong process. No, that's another one. Deerskin.
Oh,
yeah. Deerskin. And then you have Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and one of his associates came with deerskin on. That was Brahmananda Bharati, as far as I remember. Does anyone remember that story? And Lord Chaitanya said, you're not Brahmananda Bharati, basically, because my spiritual master Brahmananda Bharati would never wear deerskin. So here's an injunction in the Shastras, in the Bhagavatam, which is our primary Shastra, according to Srila Jiva Goswami. And we don't follow it. What to speak of injunctions in the Hari Bhakti Vilas? All you ladies would be in trouble. I'm not even going to mention some of the injunctions. They were just like, we'd be arrested in certain countries if we published them. Seriously. I mean, really heavy injunctions. I mean, I'll just give one that's not so heavy. You're not supposed to eat carrots. You know, that's it. So here we find even relative injunctions in the Shastras, which are quite interesting. And then we have people, all right, let's go back to our enemies. So, I'm thinking, jokingly, obviously, I'm just trying to walk people through the whole thought process. Let's go back to the people who concentrate on the details. I mean, like that, let's say one detail we're dealing with right now is Vaishnavi Diksha Gurus. Everyone's heard about this?
Yes.
The GPC Vaishnavi Diksha Gurus. And of course, everybody knows what side I'm on. Conservative side. Women should only be in the kitchen. Cooking, ironing clothes. That's it. You shouldn't talk unless someone talks. That's my opinion. Anyways. Because everybody knows me too well. So we're having this whole discussion, and both sides, and actually, that's the GBC conference I have this afternoon. Every week we have this GBC conference, which is a discussion between some of the Indian leaders and Western liberals. And so both sides are pulling quotes out and coming out with these relative statements. Of course, my statements are always absolute. And everyone else's statements are relative. But anyway, so both sides are having different statements. And it's like a quote fight. I think it's called proof texting, right? There's that in the academic world. Proof testing or texting or something.
Like a proofreading or?
No. There's a technical academic word for it. Proof texting. Yeah, proof texting is the academic word. So we're having these quote fights about relative statements. And there's a tendency to make enemy images of the other side. Of course, there are certain rascals on the other side. it's a confidential conference, but I'll just give you some idea. So there's one person who just fixed on the other side, and they put us in separate conference rooms, one-to-one conference rooms. So one time I volunteered to be in his conference room. I was ready to commit suicide. But so the point is, how to avoid seeing people who disagree with you as idiots, rascals. Yeah, the idiots and fools. My negative words are coming short. What?
Demon?
Not exactly demon, just fanatic.
Ridiculous.
Fanatic, out of touch with himself, and I'm in touch with emotions and feelings, and I'm compassionate, and he's uncompassionate. So that's one of the problems also with studying empathic communication, that you tend to diagnose other people as uncompassionate, is it? I really got it. So anyway, so I have to develop the skill to see these people in terms of people who are acting to fulfill, satisfy their particular needs, just like I'm acting to satisfy my particular needs. And it's a excuse me, it's a real challenge to do this, especially when you're dealing with political, philosophical issues. How to see, you know, so all right, so let's do guessing game. So here's the person, take the hypothetical person, who thinks, you know, women should stay in the kitchen, and he has his quotes, too. And they should always iron clothes nicely, dress nicely, only smile when the husband comes home. You got these injunctions, you know. That when the husband comes home, even if you're miserable as a dog, right? And the kids are just like making you tear your hair out. And then he comes home and you're like, you act just like the dog that waits at the door for the master. You ever seen that? That's a typical thing, the dog waits all day long. That's why people get dogs. Cats don't do that. The cats couldn't get let care less when you're home or not. But you know, the men, they want a wife like that. What do you think about it? Did you get a wife like that?
Yes.
She's like that.
She's always smiling. At our home, we're always smiling. If she misses when she's throwing the plates to me, I smile.
So, the question is, you have someone with that, or let's ask the ladies to practice empathic communication right now. You have someone like that, that's his firm conviction. How do you process that? Anybody have any ideas?
Try to ask him why he is like his experience.
He's going to get angry. Mm. If you say, okay, let's give you the scenario. He's saying your business is, you know, your husband or something like that. He's saying your business is to stay in the kitchen. You just got married, had a fire sacrifice, everyone's blessing you, and you moved into your new apartment. And your husband is saying, now we're going to read from the book called, oh my God.
Mothers of Men.
Mothers of Men. I mean, let's just say. And he tells you, here's your duty. Your duty is to just greet me at the door. Your duty is to iron the clothes. And also, women should not get educated. They should be kept stupid. So you get informed that by your new husband. And if you ask him why, it's going to make him angry. And it's just going to pull out a bunch of quotes. What?
I have a suggestion.
What's a suggestion?
That maybe one can, if one has got enough empathy beforehand.
Don't get married to the guy.
That's one way. But one could ask that, oh my dear, I understand that this is really important for you, isn't it? And I wonder, why is it so important for you?
Alright, let's do the role play.
Yeah.
Okay? This is Prabhupada's instructions.
I see, yeah. Now I really see that it's so important for you that...
Yes, we must obey Prabhupada's instructions all the time.
Yes. I really get it.
And then as far as calling me dear, don't call me dear. You call the husband Swami, which means master.
I really understand that...
Okay.
For love
you understand, then you'll do it.
I also have some other needs, so I wonder if you are interested to hear my needs.
Not really.
Maybe we continue some other time when you are fed well and happy. And
I'm happy right now.
I need some empathy.
This is actually a difficult situation. Well, obviously, let's deal with it. You're the husband now. Let's just do another role play, and I'm the wife.
May I make my comment before?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, Marshall Rosenberg says that connection before education. And if we are, as you described this conference, right, most likely it's on the head levels.
Yes, on the head
levels. My arguments, your arguments. So there is no connection.
There's no connection.
It's like ping pong, right?
Yeah.
But when connection is really there, and it may take time, it may not be fast thing, but just, you know, like weaving some beautiful cloth. If connection is there, then very often there will be at least opening to hear each other's needs.
Okay, so why don't we do the role play, and I'm the wife.
But I guess I'm not good in such strong husband role. Anyone else? Maybe
I mean, I might want you to, if you don't mind.
No, I try my best. What should I say? A little shy with you. Okay. So, my dear wife, now we are married, and now it's your turn to go to kitchen, cook and iron and wash and clean, and that's it. Fast.
All right, you want to see what I do? That's why before people get married they have to go through this expectation list. Because you really have what's called a rock and a hard place right there. And it would take years to work out those expectations. It's not so simple that you could just ask the person why and establish a heart connection, because I would say that you would need someone to help out, a third person to help out in a situation, you know, a tough situation like that, because it's very hard, because the person is just concentrated on the mind, like you said, in the mind, and empathic communication or communication between people has to be on the heart level. You know, the feelings and needs rather than the judgments. Mind is the judgment. So what we want to really do is go to the heart. And when you find someone really fixed on the mind, it's very hard. It's very hard. And that's what we've seen in this whole discussion of Vaishnava Diksha Gurus. The person is really super philosophical, super intelligent. Everything is philosophy. But as far as feelings, I mean, this particular person I'm referring to, he makes his wife, well, he makes sure his wife doesn't wear shoes even when she's traveling and going through the airport. I ran into him one time in the airport, and she wasn't wearing shoes, and she was with him. Barefoot, you know, pregnant, you know, all those nice things. So, because he has these conceptions, so my question is, okay, forget about trying to solve the problem. let's, because empathic communication is not about solving problems anyway, it's about connecting. So, what needs is someone who is really philosophical, really fixed on details, and let us say, taking a more or less chauvinistic point of view from the Vedic literatures. What need are they trying to fulfill? Anyone have any ideas?
Purity and protecting the purity.
Purity. Try to think about that. Yeah, but I don't think that's the ultimate need. Why? Then let me ask the why.
Security.
Position?
Security. I think he's getting down there. Security.
Security.
You're trying to protect.
Protecting the integrity and not falling off from the...
Yeah, protecting the integrity, protecting...
They have a picture of the world they want to keep.
Yeah, because it you take away their picture of the world, the whole world falls apart. Because their identity is based upon that. Like Prabhupada said not to preach to people, to Christians, basically. Because if you preach to them, you take away their faith in Lord Jesus Christ, then they'll become atheists. So when you pull the rug out from under someone, then they're left with nothing. So their whole reason to be is based upon, I mean, certain people is based upon one issue. You know, like we're talking about this particular individual, he is so focused on this one issue about women's place in ISKCON that we cannot defeat him, because we're going to a mental platform again. We cannot defeat him because he can come out with 10 times the volumes of words than we can. He is focused 24 hours a day, no matter what we write. And for example, on our committee, I mean, I can mention who's on our committee. It's myself, Anutma Prabhu, and Chandra Takamaraj, and Pragosh from Ireland. And so, Dipitaka Maharaj is responding philosophically. And I said, Maharaj, every time you respond, he's going to come back with 10 times the amount of verbiage. And he does. Because it's his whole life. So you really don't want to destroy someone's whole reason for existence. And you can't do that anyway. The whole concept, the whole idea is to be compassionate with them. Connect with them. You know, that he's feeling the need for security, protecting. You know, and you can see that, if you talk to them personally, you can see that in their body language. Like one of the things we talk about is that body language is most, body language and tone of voice, that's what, 92% of communication. Something like that. There's different ratios. And the words are very little. Words are very little. So you actually see, like I just went like this. You know, protecting himself.
Protecting something that is so valuable for him.
Yeah, that's very valuable. And you take that away. And that's, you know, he could have psychological problems if you take it away from him. And you find this often with religious people. They stick to certain details and they identify their religious beliefs with the details, and if you take them away, then it takes away their faith. Which is really interesting. And here's another issue that's in regard to this. It has nothing to do with chauvinism or feminism or anything like that. We have this whole study group and courses on something called hermeneutics. I don't know if anyone's now heard of hermeneutics before. No. Anyway, hermeneutics is basically the science of how to understand Shastra or understand any sort of philosophy. Right? He's a professor. He's going to get a PhD, piled higher and deeper. So we're looking, and this is a little controversial subject matter, because we're looking at Prabhupada's books. And in certain places in Prabhupada's books and Prabhupada's statements, there's certain things that are just Prabhupada's opinion or not absolute. And there's nothing wrong with that. Because Prabhupada is a person, and Prabhupada has opinions. For example, Prabhupada says potatoes are the king of all vegetables. I don't like potatoes. Does that make me a demon? Maybe. And actually, potatoes didn't come from India. They're originally from good old Ireland and from Europe. And you heard of the potato famine in Ireland many years ago? Anyone heard about that? In Ireland, they had a potato famine, and practically most of half the population died because there was a potato bug or something. So here are Prabhupada's statements. And, you know, and then going back to the statements about women's position, Prabhupada makes some statements about that, too. And Prabhupada makes contradictory statements, which are really interesting, about the position of women, or in different subject matters, not just the position of women. So Prabhupada is making all these different statements that not in every case are absolute. Because Prabhupada, according to our philosophy, is a person. With likes and dislikes, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I say, you know, every night I'm eating kasha, I say the best prasadam is kasha. That doesn't mean that all my disciples have to just like eat kasha all the time. You know, someone asked me the question the other day about being a vegan. You know, if I'm your siksha disciple, addiction disciple, does it mean I have to be a vegan? I said, no. Does that mean I'm wrong for being a vegan? No, because everybody else is a rascal. But that's the joke. No, it's just relative. But we tend to absolutize, if I can coin the word, we can tend to absolutize ourselves or our opinions or Prabhupada's opinions or Acharya's positions. Opinions on details, whereas they're just details, and they're relative. So hermeneutics means basically to examine it, and to examine, just to give you a brief course in hermeneutics, to examine the statements in Shastra, statements of a devotee, and through the lens of what we call the principles of Krishna, like Dasamula or something like that. I mean, there's other lenses. There's other lenses or ways to view these things. So getting back to the point. So you have people who just want to take everything literally and absolute in Prabhupada's books and Prabhupada's statements, and that's to protect themselves. Because if you take that away from them, then their whole sense of identity or faith in Krishna is taken away. And that's actually something that devotees have to deal with as they mature in Krishna consciousness. Because you will find things that Prabhupada says in the relative platform that you may not have 100% agreement with. And then you have to be able to see, understand Prabhupada's position, why he's saying that, he's a person, he has personal likes and dislikes, and that's a very mature way to take it, but certain people are not able to. And that's the nature of this world, because of their own needs. Whatever reason they have those needs, I mean, you don't want to go to psychology and go back to their childhood, it's because your mother didn't love you. You know, that the standard side, isn't it? You are a chauvinist because your mother, she used to spank you too much. Doesn't work. you know, standard formula in psychology. You have an Oedipus complex, you know, whatever. You don't want to go there. So I think that the world, everybody's different. There's a lot of variety in this world, and everybody has different prominent needs at any one time, isn't it? And to respect that, and certain people you just can't change. I mean, getting back to that husband-wife situation, it may not be solvable. I mean, you may be able to connect on the heart level, but his whole sense of identity is buzzing. And you know, basically, maybe there can be some arrangement between husband and wife so they have their separate lives or something like that. But he definitely wants a Vedic wife, you know, a Vedic wife. What that means, I don't know. Because, you know, Vedic means to know Krishna. As Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's in chapter 15, text 15. By all the Vedas I am to be known, right? So that's what it means to be Vedic. Not to dress in a certain way. You know, you get into all these things like parting your hair in a certain way. If you part your hair on the left, you're a prostitute. You part your hair on the... I don't even know if that's what it is. Part your hair on the right, you're whatever, you know. If you shave your hair... your brahmachari, you know, whatever. It can drive you crazy. At least someone like me. It can drive crazy. So the whole point is to see that people are a certain way and don't try to change them. I've never been able to change anybody. In all my years in the Christian life. I mean, I've been able to give people Christian consciousness, have their hearts purified, they haven't caught the holy names change people, but as far as people having different mindsets, they carry that to Krishna consciousness. Like we've seen, even in our movement, you got the vaxxers and the anti-vaxxers, right? And never the twain shall meet, as they say. You know, I've tried my best to argue the anti-vaxxers into taking the vaccine. Of course, I force all my disciples to do it. Some of them have almost died. Gradually, almost. Now you didn't almost die, right?
From taking the vaccine.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
I was close to death.
Close to death.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm here.
So I mean, but you got people. So we have to respect diversity. That's the point I'm making. And so, in fact, you know, it's important that you're here, Baladev. So you'll have people in a management situation, and I'm not referring to any particular country right now, who may be very, like, their concept is very centralized, want to control everything. And then you have other people who just want everything to be more, let 1,000 flowers bloom. So we have to work with that because that's life. Instead of enemy images of thinking this person is a jerk, demon, rakshasa, holding up the progress of the Krishna consciousness movement, then you respect that person is protecting their own worldview, right? And then, of course, you have to get in touch with your own feelings and needs first. Yeah, that's important. Thank you for correcting me. I picked it up on a subtle part for the body language. So you have to get in touch with your own feelings and I am feeling angry because I am a meat. To share Krishna consciousness and be open to all these poor souls. So you get in touch with your own feelings and needs. I'm not angry at you. I'm angry because I have a need. Yeah, you know, what you did stimulated it, but you know, you're not the fault or you're not the cause of my anger. So we're talking about taking responsibility, like we were talking yesterday. I'm just giving you a practical example, you know, daily life, practical example of not denying responsibility. Because you deny responsibility, you know, I'm angry, it's your fault. So, yeah, okay, the person's the way he is. I deal with my own feelings and needs, you know, I have a need to spread Krishna consciousness. And once you deal with your own feelings and needs, you feel a lot better about the whole thing. You know, I'm angry because I have a need to be open to spread Krishna consciousness. This person, then you can think capacity. This person is trying their best within their ability. I respect that. They're great Vaishnavas and everything like that. And because I have this need, I'm going to think of some way of doing what I have to do, as they say, make it an end run. What? An end run? That means going around someone's back. Or doing it, you know, just doing it without disturbing other people. I mean, I'll give you an example. One time, my own life. I'm not saying this is the strategy everyone should follow. So, I was in a particular place where everything was very... This was the old guru, acharya, zonal days. You know, I was in a place, everything was just like controlled by the acharya, you know, subtle acharya. And you have to be like, yes, sir. And that... Anyway, so that wasn't fulfilling my needs. So I just got in my car and drove away. And opened a temple somewhere else. I'm not saying that you have that alternative. But if you start to think outside the box, rather than simply being oppositional and drawing an enemy image to the person who's you think is interfering with your service, then you come up with all sorts of inventive, you know, outside the box, you know about that, what that means? Something really amazing. Then you come up with all sorts of strategies. I mean, like that we have this COVID thing, or we used to, or we may have it again. And everybody's, you know, we were trapped inside, so we went on the internet and we developed the whole preaching strategy. Like even Prema here, she's preaching so much on the internet, more than ever before, right? And nobody can stop her. Nobody can stop her. You just get in your computer. I mean, nobody's going to come into your house and pull your internet away from you. And then the world is open. So what I'm saying is if you have a cool mind, you're more likely to come up with an alternative. If you're not looking at enemy images, I mean, sometimes it's really satisfying just to blame someone else, isn't it? It just feels really good. Yeah, it's my fault. I don't have to do anything about it. You know, I can't preach Krishna consciousness here, but, you know, I'm just going to be my own self. Then you go on the internet and you just type in so many negative things about a particular individual, particular situation. And you see this all the time. A lot of frustrated people out there on the internet who are just like venting their frustration. I mean, so much frustration. Anytime, even on a news site, you have some statement and then people make comments, it usually degenerates into ad hominem attacks after about four or five comments. Because there's a lot of frustration out there. And that frustration is based on, you know, other people blaming other people. But we don't have to blame. If we have a cool mind and we see that other people are simply trying to fulfill their own needs, and that's, you know, they just have a different perspective, a different need. Like the need for, I don't have that need for security. My whole sense of identity is not based upon, you know, verbatim following everything in the books. because I can ascertain, I can use hermeneutics to ascertain, hermeneutics, as I explained what it was before, to ascertain which are inviolable principles and which are relative principles. So I'm not, my whole sense of identity is not based on that. But I'm different. It's not that everybody can be like me. So it's a question of recognizing differences, recognizing different needs and feelings and everything like that, and then the world would be a happier place, isn't it?
But one thing, may I?
Yeah.
That if there are always more strategies to meet needs than one.
Yes.
We live in an abundant world, right? But if a person is not connected to the needs, then he may see only one strategy.
That's right.
Instead of this. And he's just clinging on this one strategy as a drowning man clings to the straw.
Right.
And as you said, if he, and he cannot let it go, because if he lets it go, exactly what you explained. Right?
Yeah.
So the key is to help a person to
connect
to
the needs.
Needs. And then the, it opens up, as you also explained, the view that there are many more strategies to meet that need. And again, solution will find us. We don't have to solution.
Yeah, there's many more strategies to meet certain needs. Unlimited strategies.
But you have to realize that it's about his needs.
Yeah, it's about his needs. It's not about the other person.
And that it's not that the needs they have are the absolute thing. They first have to accept that this is subjective.
Well, the needs. They're certain.
And that they are subject to change.
Yeah.
Why would I change if I'm absolutely right?
Well, that's strategies. Yeah, strategies can change. Whoops, here's the DD necklace. Didn't want to fall on the floor. So strategies can change. But to recognize the needs and not to blame others or the situation, then, I mean, for example, the way Krishna consciousness was spread in Russia, it wasn't a particular person that was against it, it was the situation. So they recognized, the devotees recognized, I mean, they were thrown into jail, they were thrown into the institutions for preaching Krishna consciousness. So they recognized the need to spread, and you couldn't print books. So instead they just like hand copied the books and Xeroxed or whatever the books. And somehow or other Krishna consciousness was spread because they employed non-stereotypical means of spreading Krishna consciousness, because they understood the need was to spread Krishna consciousness. Similarly, in China, the devotees have spread Krishna consciousness in a very dynamic way because they understood the need rather than sticking with specific strategies. So strategies have to change if we're going to be successful. But the only way we can understand that and not stick to a specific strategy, which is what Bodhi Radhika just pointed out, is to understand the need, the underlying need. And if we're finding ourselves getting angry, that's all right. But to ultimately understand the need connected to that anger and not to blame the person for the anger, but to understand and connect, not blame, but to connect the need with that anger. And once you do that, the anger is also taken care of. Does that make sense? I think that's very appropriate today to talk about something like this. Any questions about that before we go on to anything else? Yeah.
Sometimes people that like have like seminars like these say that only one person is needed for the situation to change.
Yes.
Yeah.
But how would this apply to this then? Because like, for example, if you mentioned like, I don't know, if there's like a marriage like that, but other person
sometimes you can't change.
So it's not true. What
you can try. Only one person is required to change, but it's not a managerial technique that you can force change. I mean, my personal experience is that you can try your best, and many people can change, but certain people, their whole self-worth and worldview was based upon one particular thing. What do you think?
Situation.
Yeah.
Shall I
yeah. Why don't you share that?
Such a long story. I tried to make it short. There was, I was working in a very hierarchical system.
Yeah.
And there was one person above me who was, in my eyes, he was not a human being. He was just a rascal and etc. etc. And I was like medium, little leader, and under me were other people.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave some very stupid orders or tasks to do, which didn't which were not really in harmony with my values.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was so important to walk my talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't convey this, I didn't want to convey these orders to my people because I valued honesty and
right.
integrity and so on. And then I thought, no, I cannot go on like this anymore. I had to tell him. And when this happened, then I thought, okay, I will go, and I felt scared.
Right.
And then I realized that, no, if I go out from this energy of being scared, that means I see him as an enemy,
yeah.
not as a human being. So it's
right.
not right energy to go out. And I worked on myself with this empathic communication method, just worked on myself, on my feelings and needs for months or something. And then I thought, okay, I'm ready, I go. When I met him in a corridor, I was like, woo! I know this is not right time to go. I continued working. And maybe it took 3-4 months or something like this. And then one day I thought, okay, maybe now, and I felt complete peace.
Yeah.
So I said, okay. If and when he now calls or says, I'm ready. And then he called and said something, and I said, excuse me, I will not do it. And he became like, wow. He invited me into his office, and I was so calm and peaceful with all this rage. I couldn't recognize myself. I'm not a brave person at all,
yeah.
but I couldn't recognize myself. I was so calm, and I didn't verbally do this communication with him, but inside myself I was all the time focusing, connecting with his needs and seeing him as human being. And he enraged maybe half an hour like that. And I was in peace, which was completely new thing
yeah.
for me. And then I don't remember all the details, he even complained almost to the ministry or wherever about this thing. And after a few days we met in the canteen,
yeah.
and he had also a chauvinistic attitude that all women, you know, it was in one military institution, and he never, you know, asked anything from a woman or you know, and then suddenly he came to my table where I took lunch, and he asked, Mataji, what about this one? And I was like, huh? So he changed.
Wow.
So maybe it was first time in his life when he felt he doesn't have to protect or fight, or maybe it was first time in his life that he felt in a sudden
connection,
level,
yeah.
he felt connection, and he changed.
Wow.
So it helps when we work on ourselves.
Yeah.
And in this empathic communication, Marshall Rosenberg suggests that first 6 months when you practice it, don't try it on others.
Okay, so I have some assignments for you.
That's just accidental.
When can you go to India?
This is Krishna's extraordinary mercy.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. So the whole concept is to connect, not to try to change someone.
Yeah,
if you have the concept that I'm going to change the person using empathic communication, that's not the right consciousness. But the consciousness should be to connect with the other person, and then that's up to Krishna what happens at that point. But the point I was making is not to have the expectation that you can change people, because that's really counterproductive. because we connect with people. And then, if there's a change, Krishna will arrange the change. The connection is the point. It's not a management tool. It's connection. That's very good. That's a good example. It took you 6 months to get ready. Pretty good. So, anyone else have any questions before we go ahead with the next point? Question? Yes?
Is it also true that for somebody is a need, for another person, when he sees a person with a need, thinks, oh, this is his desire, actually. You know, this is not needed for him, but a person who has this need,
what?
You know, there are two persons, one is...
Yeah, give me an example.
For example, just Saturday.
Yeah.
I said to my husband, I have to go to Ljubljana to have a day off, to see Panchatattva, to go to the temple. You go with me? No, I don't go. So I had a need.
What was the need?
To go to the temple, to see the devotees.
Why?
Because I needed, it was a heavy month in work.
Yeah.
And I just needed to be like, you know, before Panchatattva, pray to them, like, let something off of me. So
the basic need was?
Connection.
Connection to Krishna, connection with Panchatattva.
And then he said, I won't go because Ljubljana is a hectic town.
Yeah.
So when I came back, maybe he saw this as my desire,
mm-hmm.
not needed for him, but for me was, oh.
He didn't have that need right then.
Yes.
But you had a need, your strategy to connect to Panchatattva was to go to Ljubljana. Could there be another strategy?
I suggest this one.
So your need was to connect to Krishna, your Panchatattva.
Maybe to speak also to the devotees.
To speak to the devotees, okay. Is that the only strategy that was available to you?
At that time I felt like this.
Mm-hmm. So your need was to connect to the devotees, to connect to Panchatattva, to have some spiritual inspiration.
And move from the place where I'm all the time.
Yeah, to have a break.
Yes.
To have a break, to have some spiritual inspiration, and the strategy you took was to go to Ljubljana, mm-hmm. to the temple, right?
Yes.
So, it appears to me, my mind, doing analysis, that your actual need was to connect to the devotees, to connect to Panchatattva, and your strategy was to go to Ljubljana, which fulfilled that particular need. Which is fine. So, for your husband, he didn't have that need.
Yes, and he saw it not as my need, but my, which is more than need, it's just the desire. You know,
right, I understand. Just the desire. So he was thinking basically that you had that was your strategy, that you could have had another strategy to do the same thing. Is that right?
Or that it was even more than a need. I didn't need to do anything about that.
Oh.
You know, it's more than a need. It's a not important desire.
It's not an important
like,
need. It's not, in other words, he was... Was he thinking that it's not important to want to connect to the devotees, to see...
Maybe
Pancha?
He saw it in another way. I didn't express
so
why
have
to go there.
So how did you express it to him?
I have to go to Ljubljana.
Ah. So how could you have expressed it to him?
I don't know if he would believe me.
How about, you want me to try to be him? You want me to try to be you, and you make believe that you're him. Okay?
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah, you try to be him right now.
Okay.
You're him.
I'll try.
Okay. I've been working really hard, and I'm really stressed out. I have a need for a break, and I have a need to be with devotees for a few hours and connect to the Panchatattva, and just like spiritual connection right now. What are you hearing me say? You're your husband.
Yeah, you just want to move here and there.
That's interesting. You're saying you just want to move here and there. Okay, and I would hear him and be in touch with his need of that. Now that I'm in touch with my need, I would hear him in touch with his need. And I mean, just use empathic communication language. I would do it non-verbally generally, but just let me put it in language. Are you upset because you just have the need for stability and dependability?
I'm stable.
You're stable. That's good.
I'm stable, and I will stay at home.
Okay. So you have that. You have the need for just everything being just normal. And no changes, right?
Yes.
That's good. So how do you feel about my need for, what are you hearing me say when I say that I have a need for devotee associations and kirtans and stuff like that?
Yeah, go. No problem.
Oh. No problems. You're a good husband. Anyway, so.
It was like that.
Yeah. So he was all right with you going?
Yeah.
Oh. So you explained it in terms of a need.
But not so long. It was,
you
the conversation
have to,
was not so long.
But you just have to, and there has to be a lot more body language. You know, you have to listen to him for a longer period. Can you explain to me? You know, he, from what I hear, that he has a need to be understood. Does that sound right? And communicate. And you're just, let me just ask you, when you communicated this to him, was it just a real quick communication, a quick discussion?
Yes, because it was also my very quick decision.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, in half an hour, I said, I go.
So perhaps in the future it's good just to take time connecting with each other, because relationships are most important. Actually, one of the things we learn is that communication, connection, and relationships are the highest priority. So to take the time. Oftentimes we try to deal with things rather quickly. You know, I have a need to do this, so I'm going.
I ask him, you go with me?
I know you did that.
I would be very happy.
The whole idea is to maybe slow down a little bit when you're dealing. You know, just talk things out, try to understand his feelings, his needs, and once you're in touch with your own feelings and needs and try to understand his feelings and needs, there'll be more connection and communication. Especially in relationships like husband and wife like that, the connection is very important. Take the time. It takes time. Generally, we try to deal with things really quickly and efficiently, but actually it doesn't turn out to be so efficient. Especially when parents are dealing with children, it's very efficient to function on the basis of what Marshall Rosenberg calls a smacker or a cracker. You know, that, in other words, training up children like you train pet dogs. Like you train a dog to be housebroken, that is not just pastoral in the house by hitting him every time he goes to the bathroom in the house. So it's a quick way. There is one behavioral psychologist named B.F. Skinner. You've probably heard of him before, no? So Skinner, he was a very interesting personality. He's the founder acharya of behavioral psychology. And his belief was that it doesn't really matter if people have feelings or needs. I mean, he's the opposite of empathic communication. And what you really have to do is shape people's behavior. Just look at behavior. And you shape their behavior by mainly positive reinforcement. And he wasn't so much into negative reinforcement, although that can be applied sometimes, but positive reinforcement. I remember my mother tried it on me for a while. It didn't work very well. So positive reinforcement means if someone does something nice or something that meets your needs or something you want them to do, you give them something. A cookie. Mm-hmm. And if someone, negative reinforcement, of course, means if someone doesn't do what you want, then you give them a spanking or you take something away from them. So that was his philosophy, and I mentioned in some of my seminars that he actually trained up his daughter in the same way. He put his daughter in a box, basically, and trained her up to be the same type of psychologist he was, and she did. She became a very prominent psychologist later on. You probably heard of that before. Yeah, his daughter became a behavioral psychologist, too. So it's a very quick and easy way to deal with things. But it doesn't really touch people or connect with people. And we don't really become happy when we're in the mood, I call it the robot mood, when we're just functioning on the basis of putting ourselves on automatic pilot. Many devotees chant their rounds on automatic pilot, too. Like in an airplane, they put the airplane on automatic pilot, and then the pilots can do all sorts of things like go to sleep and do everything like that. So there's a famous saying that we have, you know, joke, that wake me up when my rounds are done. So we're meant to be connected to our activities and connected especially each other, and it's the real that's the real satisfaction in life. I think that's the one need that's most absent or in people's lives nowadays, and that's one of the reasons why people are so dissatisfied, angry, society is divided, because they're not connected with each other or even connected with the activities that they're doing during the day. They're just like on automatic pilot. And so that relationship, especially connection to Krishna, but also connected to each other. And if one is like that, one is very satisfied in life. I mean, that's been my experience. And that takes time. So one has to value the relationship. So that's why I'm mentioning in regard to your interaction. To value the relationship with your husband, to take the time to communicate your feelings and needs, to hear his feelings and needs. And there's so much satisfaction in that. Because we try to do things so quickly. And we mentioned with children, you know, raising children is really hard. I mean, of course I'm not. No, I only have 1,300 children. Yeah. Anyway, it's really hard. So it's really hard. But you have to just slow down and take the time and listen to the children and talk to them about their own feelings and needs. And then long term, that relationship will be a lot sweeter and be satisfied. And the way that many couples have raised their children in Krishna consciousness is mainly based upon externals and Skinnerian type of conditioning. You know, you go to Mangalarti and you get a Mangalarti suite if you go to Mangalarti, chant your rounds, or even, like I was communicating with one lady this morning, her husband wants her little son, he's only 2 years old, to learn a lot of verses. And so you got these little kids, 2, 3, 4, 5 years of age, who are able to quote so many Sanskrit verses. But none of the verses have they taken to heart. So people have this understanding that, oh, your kid is so Krishna conscious. He can quote like 50 verses from the Bhagavad Gita. It doesn't make a difference. Because what I've seen is when I question these children and I ask them to paraphrase the verse. Does everyone know what paraphrase means? Paraphrase means not to just give the same translation you memorized, but to actually turn it around and explain it. They can't do it. So there's a real disconnect. And that's the problem with our society, the problem with the way children are raised, in many cases in Krishna consciousness, in many cases outside of Krishna consciousness. The parents are disconnected from the children. They're judgmental, judging the children in different ways. Oh, he's a rascal. He's whatever, he or she is whatever. And instead of just trying to understand that everybody, including children, everybody is functioning according to the attempt to satisfy or fulfill their needs. Everybody. Whether they're animals. I mean, it's like let's take a wild animal, like a tiger. And the tiger is coming up to eat you. What do? You say, are you hungry? No, you don't do that. But you can be empathic with the tiger, not if you're this food. Don't be empathic, run away. But you can understand that, you know, this tiger is not mean. He's just has a need for food. That's all. Just like you have a need for food, and you're attacking the sweet ball, and he looks at you like a sweet ball. Right? So, you know, so don't even give the tiger a bad name. He's just attempting to fulfill his needs. So it takes some time to be able to sit down with other people, and try to understand their needs. First, be in touch with your own needs and be in touch with other people's. And it's very satisfying. I mean, then your relationship with your husband will be extremely sweet.
Can you tell this again? He didn't hear
that. He didn't hear?
Yeah, they were speaking in the back.
Okay. Oh, you should always listen to your wife. Because she's always right. Isn't that what I said?
No.
Prabhupada said that if the husband and wife don't argue, the goddess of fortune will always be there, so you'll always have money. How's that sound? That meets his need. Anyway, so the point is that what satisfies ourselves is having nice, open communication and connection with others. I mean, that's really what makes us happy. We're persons. We're personalists. We want to have a connection with Krishna. We want to have a connection with Krishna's devotees. We want to have a connection with everybody, all living entities. The Upanishad says one who is Krishna conscious doesn't have any images towards any living entity. Actually, that's the Upanishad. Yastu saravani bhutani atma nirvana pashati. Sarvabhuteshu chatmanam tato navigupshate. One who sees everyone is connected. This is interesting. It's an interesting verse to use in empathic communication. One who sees the connection to everyone through Krishna doesn't hate anyone or hate anything. That's this Upanishad. Let me give you the direct quote. Where's my glasses? Hey, where's my glasses? Here they are. Let me read the exact quote from this Upanishad so you can use that in empathic communication. Okay, Veda Vyas, Upanishad. Sri Upanishad. Has to be here somewhere. Which number of verses is that? Apparently
seven.
You remember.
Seven.
I don't remember the number.
Yeah, six
yet.
Or seven.
Seven.
Seven?
Seven.
Okay. Wow. Let's see here somewhere. Oh, here it is. Mantra 7. No, that's not one. It's not 7. Mm-hmm. It's 6.
6, yeah.
6. You are bold. That's too sovereign, see? You failed the test. So. Yastu Sarvani Bhutane Atmana Ivanupashyate. It doesn't matter. You take these Bhakti Shastra courses, it doesn't matter whether it's 6 or 7. But you know, they make it such an important point. I don't remember the numbers of the verses. I apologize. I've been studying Bhagavad Gita for 50 years. I mean, some verses I can give you the number of. Like first chapter, first verse. Dharma Kshetra Kurukshetra. You know, and then also sorry, I won't put this out. But it doesn't, who cares? Prabhupada, when you hear Prabhupada give class, he doesn't say, he says, find that verse. He says, well, he knows which chapter it's in sometimes. But he doesn't say, chapter 7, verse 46. And then the devotee goes to the verse index there, and he finds it. But we make it so important that people have to just, like, have all these numbers down, but they don't even understand what the verse means, in essence. It's a disconnect. It's a disconnect. So, yastu saravati bhutani atmana ivanupashati saravuts, which is what I just said. Sarvabhuteshu chatmanam tadona vijigupshate. He who systematically sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, he sees all living entities in as parts and parts of him, sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. So that means no enemy images right there. So he gets rid of hate. How many times do we experience hate? I hate the temple president. How does it feel? It makes you sick. Actually, hate makes you sick, isn't it? When you think about it. Okay, let's do an exercise. Who can think of someone they hate? Okay. Don't have to mention it. So what that person does, or the way the person acts, stimulates your anger, right? Yep. And because you have a name, don't mention names. Why? You have a need. Let's start about need language.
Yeah,
what is your need?
That's a good question. Let's say if I refer to something that occurred today already, maybe a need for spreading Krishna consciousness.
Or a need for knowing you. I mean, let me just guess, because I know you pretty well, even though you don't think so. You have a need for autonomy, freedom. That's one of your big needs. You know, just the need for people I wouldn't say a need for respect, but a need people to appreciate what you're doing and, you know, to trust you. Okay, I think I heard something with that. You know, to trust that you're going to do the right thing. And so that's your need, and your need, that's your need, and because of that need, you're taking responsibility for it. I'm just walking you through the process real quickly, because I don't have a lot of time. Is that you're angry. Because that need is not being fulfilled. How do you feel about that?
I feel that there is something there.
Yeah.
Resonate.
Yeah, resonate. So think about that need some more. Now, when you think about that need some more, anyway, we're going rather too quickly through the process, but I'm just trying to illustrate. When you think about that need some more, what need do... Let's talk about the other person. What need do you think that other person has? More difficult. I mean, if you have to guess. Because the other person is not a demon.
Yeah, this is the question.
I mean, the other person...
I think that the person probably also needs some, I don't know, appreciation or need of, maybe to have things under control. That, you know, like,
well,
that he feels that it's not being...
Why does he have a need to keep things under control?
Safety.
Safety, yeah. So now that you're thinking about his need, I know this is much too quick to normally do things. How do you feel about him? Do you feel any different about him?
Yeah. I do feel some empathy.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's much too quick what I just did with him. But I'm just trying to illustrate the point that, you know, he can feel a little bit of empathy, you know, maybe you won't kill him next time you see him. But, you know, it really, you know, you connect with the person. And I know that there's many people who are like what you're talking about, who I'm very friendly with and I really love a lot. But they'll never be like me. And we'll have opposite opinions about just about everything in the dictionary. And it's just like, but I can still connect with them. So the whole point is connection. And so this verse is extremely important. To see everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees living entities as parts and parcels. What that means is that we're all of the same nature. When we're talking about everyone as Krishna's parts and parcels, we all have the same nature, including Krishna. Krishna has his needs. Oh my God. Krishna doesn't need anything. He's aptakama. He can satisfy his own needs. But he also, because of ras and pastimes and leela, he exhibits these needs. You know, obviously Krishna has Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sambrahma Sabhima Sidramanam, right? Krishna has all these Lakshmis, he doesn't need anyone to cook for him. Doesn't need you, doesn't need me. But Krishna does have one need. He has a need for connection with us. That he cannot satisfy without our voluntarily loving him. And that's shown in the This is not Tan Goswami's book. Oh my God, I forgot. Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Sorry about that. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where you have Gopa Kumar, who comes back to the spiritual world, and Krishna is feeling, you know, hankering for him to come back in the spiritual world. Krishna has this need to connect with him. And Krishna is making plans, and Krishna is appearing as a spiritual master, just so he can come. So Krishna has this deep need of connection. And the whole arrangement of this material world with all the miseries is to actually is to actually fulfill, because Krishna's put us in a situation in restorative justice. Although it appears to be retributive. So a whole arrangement of this material world, of Krishna sending down spiritual masters, writing the Vedic literatures, is so to fulfill Krishna's need for connection with us. Because right now Krishna doesn't really feel connected in the way he wants to be connected with us. Because Krishna doesn't want to be connected with us, being forced to serve him involuntarily through his material nature. Because as a Mahabhagavat sees, everyone is serving Krishna involuntarily. Krishna wants us to be connected to him voluntarily, fulfilling his needs and him fulfilling our needs. Because when we're in our spiritual bodies in the spiritual world, then it's all need fulfillment. Because our spiritual bodies are non-different from the person, from the self. And we all have different varieties of needs depending upon our spiritual identity. And so, anyway, so Krishna is actually acting for need fulfillment. Everything, the whole reason, what's called the study of reason is called teleology. The whole reason for this material world is to fulfill Krishna's need to connect with us. Yeah, the reason for everything, isn't it? I mean, if you think of it, the reason for everything, the overriding reason for everything is connection. Even Yamadutas. You know, even the punishments or the karma and everything before us, it's all to restore us so we can connect with Krishna. And with each other, too. Yeah, you have a question?
Yeah. I've been wondering and wanting to understand more the title of your empathic communication book, Realizing Our Empathic Nature Connected to Krishna.
Yeah.
Is that an elaboration that you
just... That's
an
elaboration on it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because connected to Krishna, because everything is based on connection. The whole reason for the world, the reason for coronavirus, the reason for the suffering, the reason for the threefold mystery, the reason for the Vedic literatures, is to reestablish our connection with Krishna in a deep and meaningful way. So we should see like that. I mean, if we see like that at every minute,